Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes with me, Emma Burnell, political journalist, consultant and playwright. I have to say that last bit because tickets are now on sale for my next play, Triggered, which I will be sharing the details with in the show notes. But I'm also joined by far more successful at all the things that he does, Professor Stephen Fielding. Hello, Steve.
Well, I'm just far too important to respond to that. But hello. Hello, Emma. And hello, listener.
This month we decided, we sort of changed our minds, not at quite the last minute, but in the way that politics goes so quickly, we were going to cover something that felt relevant a month ago and feels less so now. And so we've decided instead to cover a Polish language film, so we won't be putting a clip in this one. Sorry to our Polish language speaking listeners. But the film is called Katyn. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Steve?
My Polish is probably as good as your Polish. I would say Katyn, but I'm just being very pretentious in saying it.
Like my dad when he says Mozart. And it's about, it's a 2007 film, but it's set from 1940 to, or is it 1939?
1939 is when the Second World War started, yes.
I know 1939 is when the war started. I was trying to work out when the initial scenes are, because the war's already been going at that point.
Yes, it starts with the invasion of Poland, just as the Russians complement the Germans in the West, the Russian, and that's in September 39. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And it runs through until after the war, during the Soviet occupation / ownership of Poland, and that that contestation of what that relationship is like is very much part of the narrative of the film. And it's around true life events of a massacre of, I think it's 12,000 Polish soldiers and intellectuals.
Some estimates say it's 20,000. So yeah, a lot of people, a lot of men.
A lot of men. Mm. And the narratives, dueling narratives that sprung up about that at the time and the propaganda around those. Steve, this was your choice, but
yes,
and there are obvious reasons, but do you want to sort of illuminate that a little more?
Yes, I mean, this is not a happy film. It's not about a happy subject. It is somber and serious, and I, you know, it's not an, it's a film to, you know, kind of, it would be telling our listener anyway, I suspect, something they didn't know anything about, because it is surprising, or is it not surprising? Even very well-informed, generally well-informed people have not heard of the Katyn massacre. In Poland, it's one of the defining, you know, kind of issues of the post-war period, really. Because I was a sad teenage boy, of a certain age, I was fascinated by the Second World War, and it was only through that I got to know about the Katyn massacre. And essentially, the film sort of takes us through a narrative starts with the Soviets invade along with the Germans. Again, that's something that not everybody will necessarily know, that the Second World War starts. We know there'll be the German invasion of Poland, but then thanks to the Nazi-Soviet pact, the Russians join in too, and the Russians also take Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia into their territory, formerly independent countries, and in the winter of 1940, invade Finland, right? So that's an aspect of Russian history and communist Russian history that many people don't wish to know about and just don't know about in actual fact. So the film is about this this running sore in post-war Poland, when there is, you know, in 1943, this is when the Katyn massacre is revealed. And by this point, the Germans have invaded Soviet Union, the war's going on over there, and it's the Germans, it's the Nazis that discover the massacre. And so initially there are thoughts, well, it's the Germans it's a Germans' own massacre, and they're using propaganda to blame the Soviets, because that's essentially where we are with the film. And, you know, the Germans didn't do it. It was the Soviets. But as the Soviets sort of advance into Germany and through Poland, they then want to defend themselves against accusations and claim it was the Germans that did it. But everybody knows that it was the communists did it. I mean, and this is something a bit that we might want to explore within terms of the film. Is it because they were Russians that they did it? Or is it because they were communists that they did it? And we know that Beria, Stalin's, you know, chief of security and the man responsible for many murders, he was ultimately responsible for the order. And essentially, the Russians were anticipating being in charge of much of Poland, the Poland that they had invaded for many years. So essentially, the massacre is that of a significant number of Polish officers in the army. They're taken prisoner of war, which is what the film focuses on, the officers, but also an equal number, if not a bigger number, of intellectuals, teachers, anybody from the professional middle class. Essentially, it was a decapitation strategy that the Russians had to get rid of all the middle class, all the possible troublemakers that might make their rule difficult. And so the film takes us through the point at which the Germans and Nazis are trying to exploit it for propaganda purposes, with the inconvenient truth that actually they were right in blaming the Soviets. And then the Soviets come and they are essentially telling many of the characters that black is white and white is black, that they have to accept the fact it's the Germans that did it, not the Soviets. And we're also taking through how do some of these characters deal with that, that in order to exist, they have to accept the Russian version, which is the lie and not the true version. So that's kind of it. And I guess the reason why we thought it would be an interesting film to watch. I mean, first of all, I mean, without, you know, telling our listener much that they don't really know, most of our films are Anglo-American. They're all in English. I mean, speaking for myself, my knowledge of Polish cinema, Eastern European cinema, in fact, much Eastern European history is a bit limited. But it was one film that I'd seen in the past and I was impressed by. And of course, the sober kind of subject matter seemed appropriate given we are now in the fourth week of the invasion that if you're in Russia, you're not allowed to call an invasion or a war. So we're kind of in the truth lie territory. The Russians are involved. Eastern Europe is involved. And this is possibly, I mean, the Second World War was full of crimes, full of war crimes, clearly. And this is one of them. It's one of the most egregious in Polish history. And the one that still there's a bit of a running sore, I strongly suspect, and probably defines how the Poles view the Russians.
I mean, I don't know much about Polish cinema, but I was really honoured about 5 years ago to be invited to Poland to see a festival of Polish and Ukrainian theatre for a week, which was incredible. And it was an amazing week. And the sensibility, I mean, it was more theatrical sensibility, but the tone was quite similar to the film, quite serious. I mean, not everything I saw was serious. I saw an amazing absurdist piece, which, bizarrely, most of the time I was watching something there was either English subtitles projected onto the theatre, because that's the standard at an international festival, or when it was a Ukrainian piece, so it had to have Polish subtitles, I had someone sat next to me whispering all the words in my ear. But with this absurdist piece, they didn't. So I was watching it, just without understanding the language, but letting it flow over me. And because the theme of the festival was close strangers, and it was about people living as migrants, Ukrainian migrants is Poland a lot of the time, actually that really kind of added something to the experience, not understanding the language and just being immersed in a world that wasn't talking to me. So it was quite an extraordinary feeling. But I in terms of this film, I mean, as you say, I didn't know anything about the Katyn massacre. I really, it was all kind of very new to me. And I think to this moment, we're in a different place now because we all know about Mariupol, for example. Internationally, we're seeing the war crimes happen in front of our eyes. We're seeing it all on social media. And while the official Russian narrative is very censored, you do find that some things are getting through more and more, particularly as soldiers may be about to be switched out for their rest periods. But I was really struck by some of the messaging in the film from the Soviets in particular. This is a liberation. We are freeing you. And I just thought, wow, that's so close to this moment. And you can kind of see Putin's training really coming into its own.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the film kind of takes a focus on two particular families, doesn't it? A young officer and a general's family. And there's it shows the different ways in which they respond to the fact they have to lie. I mean, that they're subject. I mean, the general's family, the wife of the general who is massacred, one of the people that's been massacred. She's subject to German Nazi attempts to get her to talk on behalf of them, you know, in terms of propaganda, saying this is an outrageous thing. Because in 1943, when the Katyn massacre was first discovered, it was very convenient for the Nazis, because at this point the tide had turned and the Russians were pushing back, and they were anticipating, you know, some kind of further reverses. So they wanted to mobilize Europe against the Bolsheviks. And for them, this was great propaganda. I mean, they exploited it as fully as they could to say, look, this is a Bolshevik barbarians. This is what they do to Europe. They kill them and then whatever. And she was in the film shows that she was put under some pressure to go along and record a message that went in with aligned with that, because her husband had been killed. But basically, I think she was threatened with going to Auschwitz in order to get her to do it. But when she initially refuses, they show her some film. And what the film does is it shows you Nazi propaganda of the Katyn massacre. And it shows you, you know, a priest is blessing, or I don't know enough about Catholic liturgy to know what they do to dead bodies. But, you know, a Catholic priest was participating in the ceremony. There were scientists there, people who were inspecting the bodies, and the Nazi commentary was saying, you know, this is a responsibility of the Bolsheviks, blah, blah, blah. And then a few, you know, maybe half an hour later, when the Russians are now in Poland and telling them, actually, no, it was the Nazis that did it, there's Russian, or maybe it was contemporary Polish newsreel, which was saying the exact opposite. Again, you've got a Catholic priest doing what that other Catholic priest did. You've got other scientific people, you know, looking at it. And it's black is white, white is black. And the Poles have to accept the version, the lie. If they're to survive, I mean, there's a debate between various characters, isn't there, about, well, what do we do? Do we resist? Do we expose the lie? Do we continue saying it's a lie? Or do we somehow accommodate ourselves into this and hope for something better? Yeah. If anything better is going to happen, because one character, I think, says, it's never. It's just going to be, you know, the Russians are going to be here forever. We can never, ever get anything from this. So there's lots of kind of broader themes that aren't just Polish about how do you respond to when you're living in a regime which is telling you lies, and if you respond by saying it is a lie, you're in trouble. And that's very similar to the situation that's facing Russians themselves today, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's I mean, I think what's really clever is they don't just talk about the official lie, and they don't just show how that is done through the propaganda and stuff, but right down to very personal things, like a woman is trying to get a headstone, not technically a headstone because it wouldn't be at his grave, but a plaque in a church for her brother. And they won't let her put it up because it has his actual date of death.
Yeah.
And that would expose the lie, because that wasn't when the Germans would have been there.
Yes, because according to the Germans, it happened in early 1940, which is when it actually happened. And of course, for the Russians, it had to happen in 1941, because that was Russian territory at that point, before the Nazi invasion of Russia. So yeah, even down to that level of detail, like you couldn't say how you're... There was a student, wasn't there, or a wannabe student, who put on his CV, you know, that his father had been murdered by the Russians in 1940. And, well, you can't put that on your CV. And he said, well, that's my life. You know, that's what happened. So, yeah, down to that microscopic detail. But there are debates between some of the characters about, you know, what do we say? What do we do?
And I don't think the people who go along with it, knowing it's a lie, are considered bad guys in the film. There's an understanding of the pressure on them to do that. And there's a difference between those who go along with it and then find they can't live with it. Those who go along with it kind of hating themselves for it, but do it anyway, because what else, what choice do they have? And that is the vast majority of people under an oppressive system. You know, it's not... You're not evil when you do what you have to do to survive.
Yeah. I guess that's a Polish film for a Polish audience. I mean, it's on YouTube, and it's got subtitles if you want to watch it. It is quite accessible, but it's a Polish film. And that's, I mean, one, you know, how far we can really properly understand the significance of this event by just watching a film about it, I don't know, but I think we can appreciate how important it was. And obviously it was kind of like the defining issue amongst many Poles for many years, if only because their parents, you know, their fathers, their sons, you know, their brothers had been murdered by this regime, which now was saying they were liberated. How sick that must have made them feel. They couldn't really recognize how their own nearest and dearest had been murdered.
Yeah, and that's obviously, we're watching lots of individual acts of bravery in Ukraine at the moment. And I think it's really important that films like this recognise both those individual acts of bravery, but also the only reason they're brave is because they're hard, you know, and making the non-hard choice isn't a terrible thing. But I think it's really interesting because for me, it's a film about two things. Firstly, it's a film about the horrific choices made by people. And there's no real kind of explanation as to why they, you know, what you don't see is Beria and Stalin going, well, the reason we need to kill all of these intelligentsia is blah, 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 blah. But these are the choices that are made, and they do not clean that up. There's the very ending is the massacre. What you are left with, the very last image on stage is of one of the young pilots that you've got to know clenching his clenched fist around a rosary.
Yes.
So it's about that brutality, but it's also about truth and propaganda. And our human inability sometimes to live with a lie, however much it might be more useful and convenient politically. And that can be true in lots of different ways, but that, you know, the fact that it's like an itch at the back of your mind that you just can't get rid of when you know something's not true, even though it's politically convenient to say it is.
Yeah, I mean, the ending is really, it's interesting that they, the end is the massacre. You're shown, you know, in quite graphic detail what happens and how they imagine what happened to many of these officers. I mean, they don't show it in chronological order. So, I think because there was so much, I mean, worse than you thought that your husband or brother or whoever had been murdered by the Soviets, but you couldn't say it. But you weren't, and for a long time, you weren't really sure that they had been, because there's one character who turns up that everyone thinks was dead. And that means that another character was dead. And because they could only identify the young officer by the fact that he'd got a jumper with the name of somebody who was the person they thought was dead. So there was a long time when a lot of people in Poland presumably just did not know quite what had really happened. So it sort of seeped in. But it also means that the brutality of it. And I mean, the way in which, if this is any reflection on how they did it, you know, they just, you know, took them by train, put them in some Black Marais, then took them to some abandoned big home somewhere in the middle of the forest. And then there was a bureaucratic process whereby they said, yes, you are the general, right, here's your file, right, tick, right, off. And they're kind of taken into a room where, you know, and which is being, you know, there's lots of blood being washed away by water. And then they just put in the room, bang, back of the head, and then put in a chute. So, and into a truck with lots of others. And you just see that happen.
It was automatized almost.
It was about as close as you could get to the mechanization of murder. I mean, obviously the Germans did it far better in the Holocaust. They got it down pat. But this was like the Russians doing their version of it. But pushing them down a chute was kind of, it's a little thing, but it was kind of appalling, really.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it was, that detail. And I thought, because the ending was the most stylized part. So they had lots of people that we'd met throughout the film that we knew were in this massacre. And they each gave a line of the Lord's Prayer as they were as they were taken out of the truck and into the trench.
Yes. Yeah, the religion, the Catholic faith was, I mean, you know, Poland being a Catholic country, I suppose, predominantly Catholic country, it popped up quite a few times in the film. And the last image, as you said, you know, the young pilot I think he was a pilot, you know, and what you see is his hand just popping, you know, just as the soil is being poured onto the dead bodies, it's his hand with a rosary. That's kind of almost, if not in fact, the last image.
Yeah, it is the last image.
And that's slightly ambiguous. I mean, the film is more ambiguous than you might have thought it would be, but it's slightly ambiguous. I mean, it's showing the church as a sort of comfort. And it's also showing that there are some priests that went along with the lie and others that were taken off by the Soviets and, you know, seen off because they didn't. But that pilot has got the rosary in his hand. But earlier in the film, he's shown to be in when the Polish officers are all been rounded up and their fate, they don't know what's going to happen to them, if anything. And he's the one that says, we need to do something. You know, we shouldn't be resisting. We should be, you know, what are we doing? You know, we're meant to be the army or whatever. And then somebody gives him the rosary and essentially comfort, as some kind of comfort to, you know, to say, well, we can't do anything, but this is the comfort. And then that's the last bit we see in the film. I mean, it's kind of ambiguous. So what for the comfort? But that was maybe the role of the church for many Poles at that point during that period. But it's a bit ambiguous for what was, you know, a very Catholic country. I don't know. But then there's the other bit that is, I mean, there's a Polish joke, and it's not like I think like most Polish jokes, it's not really that funny, which is, and I think it is a Polish joke rather than just another generic Eastern European joke, which is if there's a Russian and a German, who would you shoot first? And the answer is, I'd shoot the German first out of duty and the Russian out of pleasure, right? And so there is that, I mean, given that the film actually starts with the Russian invasion, not the German invasion.
It's terrible that my version of that is about liberal Democrats.
Oh, right, okay. So it's one of those, right. Some listener, you can Google that joke and see whether it's actually a Polish joke, but it has been adapted. It has been adapted. What? If you did that on Twitter these days about threatening Lib Dems with shooting, that would be, yeah. I think
I knew that joke before I was 10, I think. You're on the edge of a cliff, you've got a Tory and a Lib Dem, who do you push off first? Tories, business for pleasure.
Yeah. that's kind of, yeah. But anyway, let's get back to the film. There is a sense, you know, because if you've been occupied as the Poles had, I mean, because essentially it was an occupation from 1945 to what, 1990, and you had to live a lie. Are you blaming? You're blaming the communists or the Russians? right? Mm. And the film suggests you should be blaming the communists, because in the film there's a character, a Russian officer, who actually saves the wife and the daughter of the young officer, who would be taken off and probably killed by the Soviets, because if you're an officer, you're going to have your head blown off. But if you're the wife of an officer, well, you're still an enemy, so you've got to be carted off too. So this Russian officer saves her. Saves her from being taken away to a concentration camp. But he offers to marry her. And he doesn't offer to marry her out of any, well, this is what he says, and out of any kind of sort of, you know, sexual desire. But he wants to save her, because he knows that as the wife of a Polish officer, and he assumes he's dead. He already assumes they've been killed, because he has had family that the communists had taken off, and he couldn't save them. So he's basically saying, I can save you. I can save you from the fate I couldn't save my other family members from. So if you're married to me, I might die. I'll probably die. I'm off to Finland. But as the wife of an officer, a dead officer in the Soviet army, you're safe. And so we, by telling that story, I guess what the film is saying is it's not because they're Russians, it's because they're communists. I mean, I think that's where what we're meant to think. Because by 2007, when the film was made, 1990, I think, is the first time that a Russian leader says, yeah, okay, we did it, right? The Soviets did it. And it's actually 3 years before Putin actually visits Poland, and he you know, confirms the fact that it was a massacre that was the responsibility of the Soviets. But this is Putin, of course, saying this. Putin says, we were all victims. You know, we were all victims of the communist rule, Pole and Russian alike. I'm not sure if he's quite saying the same thing today, but that may have been a slightly different Putin. But that's the point. I mean, is it because they were communists or because they were Russians?
And I suspect that, there are very different politics in Poland. I went to stay in a very liberal part of Poland that's very close to the West. But the politics of Poland is quite different than the politics of the UK. And their relationship with their Soviet past is obviously still reasonably raw.
Mm.
And would have been more so in 2007, even. And I think I'm not sure that now they would draw such a distinction between Russia and Soviet.
Well, indeed, and whether Putin would say what he said in 2010, would he say that now? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. But I mean, it's a very interesting film. It's a very well-made film. I struggle sometimes with foreign language films because I have no concentration anymore. Social media has killed that. But I watched it in one go, which is unlike me with a film these days. My bladder can't usually take it. I was gripped. And it's beautifully filmed as well. I mean, the cinematography is wonderful. It's less a sort of whole story than a series of vignettes that in the end make a story. It's like a tapestry in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're all interwoven, but it's not like a linear person that you follow all the way through.
Yeah.
At most, there's the officer's wife that you follow kind of from the start to the finish. But there are lots of other stories woven in. So, for example, she ends up working in a photography studio, and that's where you meet her nephew, the young artist, and where that also links to the sister of the airman whose hand we see at the end. So it's quite sort of Altman-esque in that way, I suppose. Lots of slightly connected stories.
Yeah.
But it's so well done. It's not a jolly film. I watched it on Saturday night. I wouldn't recommend it as your Saturday night popcorn movie, But I would recommend watching it, not least because I do think, particularly as we get further from the actual Second World War, our narratives about it become more and more unrealistic and bombastic and UK-centric. And you, more than anybody, know this because you've written so much about Churchill and the Churchill myths. And I think that's increasing rather than decreasing as we move away from the war being a living memory. But I think it's a really useful corrective to have a completely different perspective. I mean, not a, hey, the Nazis were good, really, perspective. That's not what I mean by different perspective, mm-hmm. but you know, a totally different perspective on the war than the one that we're classically presented with.
And I mean, you're right. I mean, I think we're getting, the further we get away, the more we're having the British are having a more of a cartoonish version of that past and what it all meant, and it's completely distorted. But there had always been these big holes in our kind of understanding of the Second World War. I mean, given it started with the German invasion of Poland, and then a couple of weeks later, the Russians invade Poland too. And yet we don't know. I mean, and yet Katyn as a massacre, most well-informed people in Britain are innocent of knowing that, right? It's not a story that many people will know about, unless you, like I said at the start, some sad obsessive teenage boy is interested in the Second World War, and you come across that about almost by accident. And it actually is a very important thing to know about. Increasingly as well, it raises questions about the post-war settlement, the Cold War, the fact that, you know, the British and the Americans basically conspired with the Russians, you know, in terms of, you know, well, you can have Poland, we'll move the borders around, you have this bit, you have that bit. That kind of realpolitik, not about right and wrong, but about accommodating yourself to what you think you can do. I mean, there were other episodes, you know, apparently, you know, the British handing over Russian Cossacks to the communists and knowing that because they'd opposed them in the war, they were going to all get killed. But they were handing them over because that's part of the agreement. And it's kind of, we were complicit, you know, our country, our leaders were complicit. I mean, they made bargains, you know, do you want to keep going on fighting, you know, the new enemy now, the Soviet Union, you know, after 5 years, and, you know, is this what we should be doing? And should we just allow them to, you know, to get on with it? Because, you know, Poland wasn't exactly a democracy, even, you know, before the Second World War, although Czechoslovakia was, but who cares? So it raises questions that, you know, all that, the massive injustice that we allowed, you know, for maybe good reasons, we allowed to remain until the fall of the Berlin Wall. We allowed to just persist. And we were all having happy little lives on the other side of the Iron Curtain, you know, better off than ever we'd been, full employment, all having jollies. And they weren't, right? And it also raises one question, or at least a big question, about those people on the left who fell along with some of the myths about the Soviet regimes of that period. There's one historian, one of the most famous historians, I guess, Eric Hobsbawm, who had the cheek to go to, I think it was Hungary, after the Berlin Wall had come down, and to tell students that actually it was a good thing, you know, materially, it was a good thing, the Soviet occupation and these communist regimes. That, I mean, not that they should be grateful for it, but they should see the upside of it. Well, I think he should have told some of the people in Poland about that as well, and seeing what, I mean, I'm not sure what the reception was in Hungary, to be fair, but that kind of one-eyed, you know, selfishness, you know, realpolitik, politically motivated or not. I mean, Churchill went along with it as much as anybody else. And that does raise certain questions about what's going on in Ukraine and what we in the West, we in Britain are doing. What are we happy to see? You know, Ukraine is meant to be defending Western values when we're supporting them insofar as we're supplying them with some weapons and a few, in this country alone, got about 3 refugees per week to come over. And yet we're allowing them in the name of Western values to get bombed to shit, right? Yeah. and not to do anything about it. But that raises, you know, well, do we want to escalate? Do we want to do this? What, it's complicated, of course it is. But yeah, this film kind of, in me at least, I think it was one reason why I was interested to watch it again, raises questions about our complicity in what they went through.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's a great place to end it. The film is definitely worth watching, particularly at this moment in time. I think we should just do our platitudes, which is all we can do, and say to anyone who is listening, please do support Ukrainians however you can. I'll put a donation link again on the show notes to, I think there's a Red Cross appeal. Just keep doing what you're doing. Maybe one day we'll review Zelensky's old comedy, of which clips keep surfacing. And also, did you know that he's the voice of Paddington? Talk about your Zeitgeist tapes crossover.
The Ukrainian one, yeah. I think if we're going to do that, yeah, we do need to learn Ukrainian, I think.
Possibly. Yes. All right, lovely. Well, thank you so much, as always, Steve. It's been a real joy. And thank you to everyone for listening. You can buy tickets for My Play Triggered. There will be a link in the show notes. And it just leaves me... Thank you to Stuart Wood for our theme tune. And this has been a political...